Okay, my microphone is on and we are on the air. Martin, could I get you to close those doors, please? Every time anybody comes in or goes out of the entryway, Nadine, it's time to start class. Nadine? Today? No, she's ignoring me, which happens quite often. All right. It is time to start our class. We are on Lesson 18 of the Chronological Study of the Life of Jesus by Gene Taylor. If you look at Lesson 18, up at the top, he's got the rich ruler. But the passages are Matthew 19, 1 through 12, and Mark 10, 1 through 12. And the first three questions have absolutely nothing to do with the rich young ruler. You found that out, didn't you? So I think it's probably a mislabel, which makes me feel somewhat vindicated for my lesson 4 in John. Because what I do, and I'm apparently what he does also, is you're building these lessons. You build one. Well, that's now your matrix. And instead of going through the whole process of rebuilding each new one, you edit, paste, copy, paste. And then you just go in and change the questions or the changes that are necessary. Well, sometimes I think I've gone in and made the changes and I haven't. So I wind up making duplicates. And I would think that that's probably what occurred with Brother Taylor, but don't know that for certain, so I don't want to speculate too much. But we are not talking about the rich ruler, at least yet. That comes in at about what? Question 6. Okay? So we do have some things that we will be discussing this morning. What I can tell you and what I know is this. Matthew 19 and Mark 10 and these passages are talking about marriage and divorce. Okay? On the front, there is no question about marriage. God approves of marriage and supports it and blesses it. Take marriage off the table of discussion. It's not part of the discussion. Divorce can be a part of the discussion dependent upon how we understand it. And we'll talk about that this morning. What I can tell you is that in my experience, limited of about 50 some odd years, 60 years, the questions always come up in the remarriage part. Always. You can't get remarried. You can't get remarried. And then we start in with the hypothetical situations. Well, what about the guy who, we make it much more difficult than it needs to be. But with that said, as we get into our discussion, I'm not going to have answers for you. I can give you my opinions, but they're nothing more than that, my opinions. In my office, I've got at least 3 or 4 different books on the so-called MDR question, marriage, divorce, and remarriage, which I've just expressed to you I'm very uncomfortable with. Marriage is never a problem. God says, okay, marriage is good. Okay? It's the divorce and remarriage we got to worry about. Even then, don't worry about it too much. Okay? But each one of those 3 or 4 books has a different thought. One of those books was written by the man who used to preach here, Maury Estes. And I've got Maury's book back there. And I've read through it multiple times. Some of the things I agree with, some I don't. That's just going to be the way it is as we look at these things. If it were hard and fast, 1 Peter 3 is about as plain as we can get. Baptism now saves you. Is baptism necessary for salvation? There's no question, is there? The question is answered. There it is. Our job is to accept it. Period. Okay? If God had something that he wanted us to hang on to hard and fast, he would have told us that. He doesn't. He leaves it somewhat open and up in the air. Is that better? Besides, you guys are going to have some really great comments that I want to catch on the microphone. Okay? So, some of this, God actually does leave up to us. Some of it. Some of it, God has some demands on. Okay. I've really been very vague and beat around the bush on that one. Did so intentionally. Is that a hand, Aaron? I wasn't sure. I said, you know.
How many pots should I get?
How many what?
How many pots should I get? We just cited that in the Divided Kingdom. We were talking about some things that God leaves out. How many pots should I get?
Yeah. That's it. Okay. Well, with that particular introduction, we want to open our class. Welcome to everybody. We're glad that you're here. If you're on live stream and joining us, we will be in Matthew 19 and in Mark 10 today. And interestingly, in both passages, it's verses 1 through 12. We would invite you to join us. If you have questions or comments, you can text me. And I'm going to set it right here in front of me, and hopefully I'll see it when the light flashes so that I can get the comments and or questions in. We do want to open with a prayer. Who haven't I picked on lately? Mike Stepke, would you lead us in a word of prayer, please?
Heavenly Father, thank you for all the blessings you have given us in life, especially the time that we have when we can gather together like this to study from your word, and the blessings of other times where we can gather in different places in the world, always with a desire to study and see what your word has to say, what its truth has to say to us, and how we apply it in our life. Thank you for watching over us. Thank you for helping us to understand and help us to be even more understanding as we look at your word and see the things that you have to say about this subject, and help us be mindful that our way is not the way. Your ways are higher than our ways, and much more. Well, you are the authority. So help us to be mindful of that, to be mindful of our brethren as well, careful for them, helpful where we can be. Continue to be with us as we listen closely this morning. First thing we pray, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay. Quick, brief history. Jesus will bring it up in both Matthew and in Mark. Were the Jews allowed to divorce? Yes, they were, as part of their law. And in fact, you can go into Deuteronomy and you can read what the law, the old law, said concerning divorce. So divorce was a part of God's law given through Moses. We can't deny that. We can't argue against it. That's just the facts. We get to Malachi, and what is it that Malachi tells us about how God feels about divorce? God hates divorce. Well, I don't know about you, but the fireworks are going off and the questions are popping up in my mind. If God hates divorce, why would he make it a part of the law given under Moses? That's what Christ says, both in Matthew and in Mark, that divorce was allowed because the people had a hardness of heart. Their hearts wanted that. Okay, that's the answer. Raises another question, though, doesn't it? Is divorce sin? Is it sin? Being drunk is a sin. Is divorce a sin? That's one answer. But if it were sin, then God allowed sin, right? And God doesn't allow sin. God never condones it. Mike? Okay. And so Mike's heading in the right direction. Go ahead. And Mike said pretty much what you said, Nona, but go ahead. So when we look at this concept of divorce, first off, how did the Jews understand the principle of divorce? In general, going all the way back through the Old Testament. What was their concept of divorce? It was the breaking of a covenant. If you and I have a contract and I don't fulfill my end of the contract, I have divorced you. I've committed adultery against, I have broken the contract. So that concept of adultery that Mike brought up, of the immorality translated from the word of adultery, that's that breaking of the contract. When you read in Malachi where God hates divorce, what's the context there? The context of Malachi is talking to the Jews, talking about the covenant that they had made with God, and they had broken that covenant. That's adultery and how the Jews thought of it. That's this concept of divorce or separating ourselves. A number of years ago, I was diagnosed with diabetes. I divorced myself from drinking 3 or 4 44-ounce Pepsis a day, which is, by the way, why I had the diabetes, I'm sure. Okay? But I had to separate myself from that. I divorced myself from that. So what we're trying to do is just to bring up some principles that might dispel some commonly held thoughts concerning divorce today. Mike said it. God doesn't like divorce. But it's not sin. and nor can you see in the scriptures anywhere where divorce is called sin. Remember what I said on the front end? God likes marriage, wants everybody to get married. If a split comes for whatever the reasons, and there might be sin involved as far as the reasons. I've mentioned before, I had an aunt who my uncle, when he would get drunk, would beat her. He was a mean drunk. She finally left the man. She listened to the advice that all of the family had been giving her for years. There was no sin in that. God does not demand that you live in a situation where your life's in danger. She divorced him. There's no sin there. But questions might have come up. As far as Elsie was concerned, they never arose because she never got married again. But you see, it's that remarriage part that begins to become murky. So let's look. Matthew chapter 19, if someone could please read verses 1 through 12. And then in Mark chapter 10, if someone could please have verses 1 through 12 ready. Matthew 19, go ahead.
And it came to pass that when Jesus had finished these sayings, he departed from Galilee and came into the coast of Judea beyond Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?
Hold right there for just a moment. Pay attention to the question that the Pharisees are asking Christ in verse 3. Then relate his answer that Michael's about ready to read for us back to that. Go ahead, Michael. Hold a moment. In verses 4 through 6, does Jesus answer the Pharisees' question? No, he doesn't. Their question is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for any cause whatsoever? Jesus doesn't answer that. What he does say is this was God's original intent for man and woman. One man, one woman, one life. That's God's original intent. Okay? That's what verses 4 through 6 say. Remember what I said about marriage? God likes it. There it is. God just established marriage. And God's all for it. Okay? Michael, please go on. Hold on. I'm sitting here absolutely racking my brain. Some of you might remember Randall brought some lessons on this a while back. And in his study, he had found that this concept of divorce or sending away, putting your wife away, came from two different words. Go back now into Jewish custom for a moment. When a man and a woman were preparing for marriage, there was something involved called a dowry. What's a dowry?
It's money's given when in marriage.
Money given in marriage. Who gives the money? The woman or the woman's father? Huh? Well, the father's paying the guy to take her off his hands. What do you mean? That's yeah. So, there's the dowry. Woman gets married. What she comes with, 4 cows, 3 pigs, 2 goats, herd of sheep. I don't know. You know, if you were an Indian, it might have been a blanket and a string of beads. Okay. If a man were to send his wife away because she burnt the toast, but he never gave her a writing of divorcement, where did the dowry go?
Nowhere.
He kept it. If, on the other hand, he gave her a writing of divorcement, what happened to the dowry? It went back to her daddy. Now, just what little we know about the Jews, we can see that people are playing games. Okay? In the New Testament, we talk about separation for a season to help us work things out. But what is it that God commands us to do? That after a time, we're to what? We're to come back together. Okay? So that we don't fall prey to the temptation of our lusts. Okay? Same concept. A man can send his wife away because she displeases him. But if he doesn't give her a writing of divorce, he keeps the money or whatever it was. If he gives her a writing of divorce, she gets the money. Now, what Randall discovered, and I had not read this in any of the 3 books that I've got, is there are 2 different Greek words used. One has reference to that concept of sending her away but not giving her a writing of divorcement. The other talks about giving her a writing of divorcement. What's the difference? Yeah, the money. The she's the contract she's made has been broken if he's given her a writing of divorcement. And what is it that Deuteronomy says the woman was free to do? She can go get married. And if he gives her a writing of divorcement, the second husband, she can go get married with one stipulation. What was it? She can't go back to the first guy. Okay? She could get married and divorced 20 times, but she could never go back to the previous. Okay? That's what the law says in Deuteronomy. Now, when we read what Christ is saying here, the motivation, because of the hardness of your heart, and we can speculate all day long about the reasoning behind that. I can't begin to tell you. I don't know, other than I think that the Jews had such a desire to be like the nations around them, that this was one of the things that they saw the nations around them doing, and they wanted to engage in it also. Speculation, take it as such, don't know. Because of the hardness of your heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it hasn't been so. That's verses 4 through 6, okay, that he's just talked about. This was always God's intent. One man, one woman, one life. That was God's intention. You didn't want that. God allowed it. See, Moses did not establish the law. all Moses did was the mouthpiece for God who established the law. Always keep that thought in mind. Moses didn't allow anything that God didn't allow. He couldn't. He didn't have that authority. Okay? So, then verse 9. I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Think about what we've just talked about. When we get married, we establish a contract. God intends that contract to be for life. Immorality can give us reason, does give us reason for adultery or to break the contract. If the contract isn't broken and she goes out and gets married or the man goes out, when we say she, please take it generically. This isn't a hammer on women any more than it is on men. Okay? But when the contract of marriage is not broken and you go and marry somebody else, you're committing adultery, aren't you? Because you're still in a marriage contract. There are various things that break the marriage contract. Here and in Luke or Mark, Christ talks about immorality. How do you define immorality? There's a bunch of things that are immoral. Now, definitions. Today, when somebody says adultery, what's the first thing that pops into your mind? Huh? You're having sex with somebody else. Is that adultery? Say yes. Is that the only thing that is adultery? No. Especially when we understand this concept of adultery as the Jews understood it, the breaking of the contract. What can break the contract? Does a man beating his wife break the contract? How about the wife beating the man? How about the man not going out and earning a living to support his wife when he is able to? Yeah, because that's part of the contract, Karen.
So we need to break down the word adultery. When is something adulterated?
Yeah, when's the contract broken?
Well, yeah, adulterated means putting something in that's not...
changed or perverted?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Nona?
I believe that having an idol other than God.
Absolutely. That's adultery. In fact, that's the reason why the language is used in the Old Testament about Israel being what kind of a nation? An adulterous nation. That doesn't mean that the people of the nation were going out and having illicit sex with anybody else. It means that they had turned away from God to a different... They broke the covenant. They broke the contract. So, there's idolatry. Immorality. First thing, when somebody says the word immorality, what pops into your brain? Sexual immorality. But immorality is a much bigger umbrella. It can include a lot of things.
So where does fornication come in?
Here's how people define the difference. The most common definition is that adultery is illicit sex between at least one person who was married that's committing the adultery and someone else. Fornication is illicit sex, meaning prior to marriage, between two people, neither of which are married. That's the common understanding. Go ahead. Anybody? Because Gil's got a different understanding. Imagine that.
I had heard that it was fornication was like a lifestyle. You know, that it was like a continual.
Okay. To me, fornication is the term that covers illicit sexual intercourse. And I'm not trying to be crass. I just don't know how else to explain it. That's the term that covers it. Whether somebody's married or not, the concept of adultery comes into play because the person who was married is breaking the contract between them and their spouse. James. Yes.
No different than what Jesus is teaching in Matthew 19. The second thing is that during Jesus' day, there were two rabbis that were the predominant thoughts of the day, Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai. Shammai was a conservative, and he believed that you had to have a very specific reason of adultery in order to divorce. Hillel taught that if she burned the bacon, that was unbecoming, and therefore she could be removed from the house because of that. So they're trying to challenge him on this idea of this thought that's coming out of the Sanhedrin. Fornication in the Greek, which is the word porneia, means anything related to the physical aspect of the relationship. Adultery was physical, but it was also social. You were not handling your social commitment, your covenantal relationship with your spouse and with your household when you were involved in adultery. That's the way that they interpreted all of this. So Jesus takes it one step further and calls it immorality, which is the combination of the two together, the idea of being physical with the idea of violating that social construct because of this wanton desire and overly exerted desire for the physical of another person.
Yeah.
And so that's, he was obviously the master of this, but he was trying to not only show them that they were ridiculous in these thought processes that were coming out of the Sanhedrin, but also that God never intended from the very beginning. And they would have understood this if they knew their history, because they could have seen this over and over and over in their history.
Yeah. Okay. So what, take what James said, and that's the segue back to our discussion and looking at it. In verse 3 and in verse 7, two questions are asked. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for any cause? And why did Moses then allow divorce to occur in this concept of giving a certificate of divorcement? Jesus answers that question in verses 8 and 9. What's the answer?
The second one first, because of the hardness of their hearts, because they were all doing it. And so he said, because of the hardness of their hearts, he will allow that to occur.
Okay. And by the way, therein is was Randall's discussion that the terminology used in verse 3 for putting away your wife is the concept of you stay in the marriage relationship, but you just send her out of the house because she burnt the toast. You're still married. So she can't go get married to anybody. The terminology in verse 7, she now has the certificate of divorcement. She can go get married. She just can't come back to the original. Okay? And two different words are used is how Randall was trying to explain it to me. I'm a little thick and slow, so I don't always have a quick up take on things. Jesus answers the question. The first answer is, God's intent is that you don't get divorced. One man, one woman, one life. That's God's intent. But given the fact that we're man, we're human, we mess up. Okay? Question. If you find your spouse has been cheating on you, do the scriptures demand that you divorce them? And in fact, the scriptures encourage you that if it's at all possible for you to forgive them and try to move past it. But we're man, and there are some things we just have a very difficult time forgiving and forgetting. So divorce is allowed in the New Testament. Okay, John?
Is adultery any worse than any other sin? I mean, and of course a sin is not, but I mean, to us, and if you are the one that has been cheated on, we seem to categorize it as that is even more egregious sin than any other sin, so therefore I can put you away.
Yeah. So, what? Go ahead, Aaron.
So, I've actually thought about that question a long, long time. And so what I've kind of come up with is how we gauge sin being worse than others, as men, as humans. And I think that the more impact it has on other people around that sin. So, how egregious is a divorce where there's no children involved, versus how egregious is a divorce where there's many children involved, or maybe there's no child support to be floated to the children, or to the some sort of support to the wife, or the money of the dowry was spent to the people. So I don't think there's anything wrong with talking about sin being more egregious than another. In the eyes of God, the point is man and woman were designed to be together. However, the egregiousness comes from the fallout of the sin and how large that is. Now, no man is an island, there's always fallout, but how big that is comes on, that's how we gauge levels of egregiousness in sin.
Okay. So what we've tried to establish then, first off, the concept of adultery is the breaking of the contract, which is how the Jews understood it, that there were two ideas behind sending a spouse away, because, by the way, it also talks about the woman sending her husband away. The two ideas being, one, you separate, but the marriage contract is still in place. You're married. You can't go get married to anybody else. Two, the certificate of divorcement is written. That breaks the marriage contract, and now marriage is allowed. Okay? The one caveat being you can't go back to the original. Christ goes on to say then, the disciples, in answering his question, said, if the relationship of the man with his wife is like this, it's better not to marry. Why would they say that?
It's better not to have a contract than to have a contract and break it.
Yeah, it's better not to be bound under a contract, especially in a contract where the reasons for breaking the contract become pretty harsh. And the results of breaking the contract become pretty harsh. If you flip over to Mark chapter 10, what you're going to find is that it's almost verbatim in how it works. The Pharisees come to Jesus and said, well, is it lawful? Jesus said, what did Moses command you? Because you see, that's the law they were living under. What's the old law say? What did Moses command? They said, well, he said, if you put your wife away, you have to give her a certificate of a divorce. Now, you see how all of a sudden that concept of the dowry and giving back the money comes into play? They didn't want to do that. They wanted to keep the money. But if you gave her a writing of divorce, you had to give it back. They said Moses said you could do it, but you had to give her a certificate of divorce. So she just wasn't hanging out there in limbo she could go and get married again. Then Jesus said, well, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this commandment. But from the beginning, that's not what God intended. God said one man, one woman, one life. So in the house, the disciples began questioning him on the same thing. And Jesus answers them and says, whoever divorces his wife and marries another woman commits adultery against her. The only way under the old law that that could be true is if a writing of divorcement had not been given. Otherwise, the law that Moses gave, that God allowed that Moses give, every time would have caused adultery. There's no common sense in that whatsoever. Not in that understanding. So this first answer that Jesus gives has to be talking about putting her away without giving her a certificate of divorcement. Because Deuteronomy is very clear. When you give her a certificate of divorcement, she can go get married again. She is free from the bondage of that covenant. And this is where it comes in. If she divorces herself or her husband and marries another, she's committing adultery. Again, there's that concept of this has to be talking about no certificate of divorce being given. Otherwise, it could not have been adultery. That's what Deuteronomy says. Okay? So just not trying to convince anybody of anything. I recognize that there's a whole lot of different opinions and thoughts on this. Okay. This is how I understand it, trying to keep it simple and common sense. Just follow the line. Now, with that said, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. The New Testament does allow for the marriage relationship to be broken. One of them we've kind of talked about, but keep in mind that the context of everything that we see in Matthew and in Mark that Jesus has to say, the context is under the law of Moses. Jesus is very clear in Matthew 5. I didn't come to change the law. So he's not giving new laws. He's explaining and expanding the laws that they already had. So the context of this discussion and Jesus' statements have to be understood under the influence of the old law. And under the new law, yeah, if your spouse cheats on you, you can get a divorce. You can break the marriage covenant. What's another way that the marriage covenant is broken and we're free to do what we choose? Death. When your spouse dies, you are no longer under the bondage of the marriage relationship. What's another way? If the unbeliever departs, then the believer is no longer under the bondage of the marriage agreement. Virginia. If you're no longer under the bondage of the marriage agreement, yes, scripturally, you can get married. So if you're married to an unbeliever and they leave, the Christian or the believer is no longer under the bondage of that marriage relationship any more than someone is under the bondage of the marriage relationship when their spouse dies. You can't be bound to a dead person. That's a different question altogether. And thankfully, time is up. It's because what you're talking about is the concept of getting married in the Lord. And that's a completely different question to be addressed. Well, I hope I haven't confused you or muddied the waters any more than normal. We are going to pick up with question four next week, unless in your studies at home you come across something that you would like to bring up and have us discuss further. Please feel free to do so. Thank you all.